Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Assalamu
alaikum.
God, Monday morning. How are you?
Okay, by the grace of Allah. How are you doing this morning? You rested?
Alhamdulillah, getting there. I'm dealing with the, you know, the weak coast in my own kind of thing. Yeah.
All right.
I woke up at about 3 a.m. I have to adjust. I don't know what it is. I'll get back by the time I adjust. Yes, ma'am. And then I'm going to have to leave again. But it's the work we do, right? The life we live. But it's been a very strange week. Challenging. I'm going to use that word. Challenging week. How are you two? Talk to me. Talk to me. Tell me what has been. We had a beautiful end of Ramadan, and talk to us. Tell us how it went last week. How about Eid? How did it go? Talk to us. Tell us what's got your scalp tingling.
Give the green light to our sister first, and then I'll
come. Yes, ma'am. Tell us. Talk to us. What's got your before we talk about what God, before we talk about the, you know, the thing that we know has got our heart pounding, tell me what's got your heart skipping a beat first.
Heart skipping a beat. Well, you know, just before the conclusion of Ramadan, I'm going to give a shout-out to Sister Adila Bilal and Sister Nirmaz Shahid from Oakland, California. Sister Adila encouraged Sister Nirmaz to pull together sisters to come together in between the time for Zuhr and the time for Asr to form a circle and to share our reflections on our experience in Ramadan and whatnot. And at the last minute, I was able to join the sisters, and it was such a beautiful gathering. And kudos to Sister Nirmaz with her skill at conducting circles. She's a restorative justice practitioner. And to Sister Adila for putting that out, that idea out there, and encouraging Sister Nirmaz to follow through. And so that was a very beautiful experience leading up to Laylatul Qadr. And I thank both of them and all of the sisters that participated in that exercise. It was a beautiful, beautiful experience. So my hijab was popping after that. That's it.
How do you follow that?
I love it.
Yes. So very meaningful. Yes, the thing that really has my heart sort of skipping a beat, we have a practice here in Mesa Mukmanuna in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, of reading and choose every morning. And even though everybody's invited to do it, you usually have about 10 or 15 people online, and each one of us reads a section. And then we have a little time, you know, after that. But hearing the voices come in the morning, first thing, giving the Ramadan, you know, Mubarak greeting to each other, greeting each other in peace, and then beginning to read together with the different voices. It's just such a enlightening experience, you know, right after Fajr prayer. We usually wait about 15 minutes before we start reading. But that really elevated my spirits, along with the celebration of Eid that we had, and had a good time discussing current events, youth, solving the world's problems at the dinner table. But that really lifted my spirits quite a bit, and very encouraged, you know, from that kind of participation and genuine concern for each other makes a big difference, a big, big difference.
Alhamdulillah. I like it. I love it. I heard about the sisters. I'm going to call it a halakha, but, you know, it could be gathering. I love the. I wasn't in town. I was leaving town that day, so I didn't get to attend. I was a little jealous. I know we shouldn't have jealousy, but being transparent, I was jealous. I was a lot jealous. I wasn't a little. I was a lot jealous. I didn't want to be able to attend. But I want to tell you, I am very hopeful that it's something that can continue outside of Ramadan, and that we can have this kind of thing, you know, and inshallah. I go to a sister's circle each week. Not all of them are Muslims. Actually, most of them are not Muslims. That was started after a dear friend passed away from suicide. and it has been very good introspection, perception, all of that, and I think it would be nice to see one for Muslims to sit together and talk from just life perspective and to see the different age groups, different life experiences, and having those kind of conversations. I think so that it gave me that kind of vibe when I saw the message in the integration. For me, I will tell you this week, I'm just going to say the good part because I got enough of the stuff that was challenging. But there was, I received an invitation when I was in Washington for a couple of different events. One of them that stood out for me was the Rosie the Riveter event. We were celebrating. So we had one here in the Bay, but the one in D.C. was for a national recognition of the women who stepped up during World War II to do some of the many jobs to keep the nation going. And the youngest woman there was 98 years old, who was being recognized. You know, they put together so some of our congressional reps, and many of them here from California, including former Congresswoman Jackie Sear, and the congressman who represented me for many years, Congressman Mark Sonier, and then currently Congressman John Garamendi, who sponsored me to have the invite on to the Congressional Gold Medal Ceremony. There was a reception, and they received the gold medal, which is one of the highest honors a civilian can receive from the U.S. Congress. And these women range from 98 years old to 106 years old. And there was 24 of them across the country. I'm just watching them, some of them quite spry, you know, and hearing the stories of when they were, you know, 17 years old and just giving up their lives, and some of them relocating across the country to do this work, you know, welders and machine operators, nurses, and admin clerks, and or pennies on the door, and just, you know, just the work that they do, the resilience that they had. And I'm sitting here thinking that we can't get 16-year-olds to get a driver's license. These women are, you know, they're like transforming the world. And maybe this is why they live into 106 years old. It is just, it was amazing. And I had the wonderful distinction of being able to help do a little bit what I do best. Besides advocacy, is doing a little bit of traffic control. We had people there who were, you know, the speaker was there, speaker of the House, but the minority speaker, Hakeem Jeffries, was there. And so I went over to talk to him, similar to you, Brother, you know, we have a lot of relationships, and so that was one of mine. So I went over to talk to him and tell him, listen, I have these women who are sitting here, you know, 103, 106 years old. They would love to have a photo with you. Some people, you know, they get into a room with people with these names and titles, and they forget this is not about you. It's about these women. So I did have the honor of being able to shepherd him and our state representative, our Congresswoman Pelosi, former Speaker Pelosi, to these women to get their photos. Because I asked him, what would you like? I want to take a picture with, you know, the speaker. And so I went to get him, and one of the women, these other women from another state, she was like, oh, I think they mean him. I said, they don't want him. They're talking about Hakeem Jeffries. She thought that I was going to the wrong person. She thought I was being Ben Johnson. I said, they don't want him. They want Hakeem Jeffries. And the lady was laughing because she was wondering how I knew, right? By the way, she did not look like one of us, Sister Amatula. The woman said, go out. Yeah. And I said, I know who she was. And so I went to get him, and she came back. She said, how did you know that? I said, I just know. So he took my hand and my cross, and we walked over together, and I was taking the pictures. And he said, I will go wherever you want me to go, Cheryl. And I just positioned him, and then all of a sudden, I looked back, and there was a row of 15 little women. What is your picture taken? With him. And I said, okay. No problem. You just stay right there. I'm going to put you. You sit down. And then he said, where do you want me to stand, Cheryl? I said, just stand right here. Okay, you sit right here. Oh, you stand right here. So I got to run traffic control to make sure these little women got their pictures taken with him, because what was happening was, you know, the guest kept taking up his time. Like, the guest, not the women who were the center of attention. So I called my mom and I said, you'd be so proud of me. I was proud of myself. You know, there are many times where I'm like, but, you know, you get to take charge and do that. And then the same thing with when I went over and I saw her, Nancy Pelosi said, hi, Cheryl, how are you doing? And these people turned around like, wait, who are you? How do I know you? I said, I'm from the Bay Area. These ones know me. And somebody else said, I'm from the Bay. She doesn't know me. And I say, I'm here all the time. She knows me. I'm here like every month, month and a half. She knows who I am. And I said, Speaker Pelosi, can you do me a favor? These ladies would really like to take a picture with you. And her staff was trying to get her to leave. And he looked and she said, no, it's okay. Come on, Cheryl, where I need to go? I said, these ladies right here. So some photos we did. And then we were leaving, and there's a young woman from Pittsburgh. Shout out to Angel, who was, she is a Boilermaker. And so I called her Alanie Rosie. And she had an opportunity to go. And I asked her if she had a photo with Nancy Pelosi or with Harrison Jeffries. She said, no. I said, well, you came all the way to D.C. You're going to get your photo. So I made sure she got her photo. And we were leaving. And the young man said, can you go by the door so people don't stop us? I said, sure. So we were going by the door. I introduced her to Nancy Pelosi and told her she's from Pittsburgh and she's a Boilermaker. She's one of our new roses. And she was so excited. And she got her photo, and she was like, I didn't think I would get to meet her. I said, yeah, just come with me. Whoever you want to meet, I'll introduce you to Nancy. So Nancy Pelosi is also Jackie Spear and Mark and the guys who put the bill together. But these women, I have to tell you, they just made my heart sing. After everything else that was going on, and, you know, we have all of these wars raging all over the world, and to know that they did what they did. And they continue to do. Some of them, there was one who just retired, 101. She's been working since she was 17. And I'm sitting here complaining that I got to work till I'm 72. I got to work 20 more years. I'm like, it's working. I said, I'm going to be really quiet right now. Let's go over in this corner and be quiet. I'm not going to complain no more. That was just tremendous. One has been in, she told me she was in the same sorority as some of us, and she was like, she's been in this sorority longer than I've been living. So, like, it's just, when you couple that with, like, the earlier in the week on Tuesday was the eclipse, it just makes you see how small you are in the continuum of the world. It gives you great perspective. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I bring that back. I just bring that back to whatever challenges you might be facing, just thinking about all the challenges they faced back in, you know, the early 1900s. Just really brings perspective to whatever we are going to be facing in this world. That, and then I say the last thing is put women in charge. Because apparently they got some kind of secret sauce we don't know about. They don't just say, you know, we can do it. They had on their backs, we did it. And I was like, yes, you did. So that made my heart good. Okay, back to you, sir.
Oh, wonderful experience.
Yes, it was. Enchanting, enchanting. I'm so happy to be able to do that. I know we got to talk about what was not going good in the world, but that was what is going good in the world.
You know, I'm going to have to add 30 seconds to the good things going on in the world. I'm literally supposed to be in D.C.
Yes,
right now at the second annual Religious Freedom Summit. Usually I'm there, but this year I'm doing it virtually. But I got a report this morning that we had 800 people, 350 people there present, 400 online virtually. It's the second time they've been the Religious Freedom Summit, sponsored by Americans United, and I'm on the International Interfaith Board. So it was just very encouraging. The report I got this morning said we had 40% more young people than we had last year, and they're running the show, basically. You can evaluate every workshop as soon as it's over, and they're running all the technology programs and keeping things moving forward. And two things they had major discussions on was just, you know, 2025 project that I'm sure many of us are familiar with, and this threat to democracy, you could call it, from the white Christian nationalist group and what they're doing to try to influence every aspect of the political process. But the encouragement was that so many young people are tied back into it, and I think it's interdenominational. Those that are not interested in faith are also present, so you had a good combination there. So I'm supposed to be back on call at 3:15. I told them I'd be busy until 3 o'clock. So that's very, very encouraging. On the other side, I picked up the New York Times this morning and saw an article about the Congo. And I've been reading a little bit about it, but I had no idea that 6 million people had been killed and there's 6 million people displaced. And I said, how in the world could there be no attention to that kind of atrocity in the media? So I'm making my singular purposes. Let's follow up on that, do some more research to see how that evolved to that point. But you can have 6 million people destroyed like that and no media attention, or very little on that issue. But it made front page this morning on the New York Times. So inshallah, you know, with the kind of energy that our senior sisters have, that you experienced, Cheryl, that you experienced in Washington, D.C., we can put another perspective on this matter and remind people about humanity versus the opposite of humanity, which we know is happening in other places too around the world, unfortunately, including Sudan and other places, not to mention what's happening in Gaza. All right. That's my concern about, you know, what's sort of getting me a little over the last week in a way. I am encouraged with the criminal case as far as, I think, somewhere down in New York City today. I am encouraged by that. All right, so I'm still looking.
My hometown, Big Apple, New York City, taking care of the business.
All right.
And we hope that Allah will bless D.A. Bragg to uphold the rule of law.
Yes.
I'm encouraged by that.
That one is really important. That, you know, I've seen lots of text about, oh, the mightiest, he has the mightiest touch, he's untouchable. So I think it's more important not just from, you know, I think it's more important from a justice standpoint, not just against this individual, but also from a bigger standpoint for the national and international communities to ensure that there's not a repeat of this behavior from other actors. Because of the way that it's being viewed nationally and internationally, there has to be some sort of condemnation of this behavior in this case and also the behavior in several other cases that are pending. And to not do anything is upholding this view that there are people who are beyond reproach, which is the direct opposite of the message I believe that the so-called, and I call it so-called, justice system is trying to portray. So we will see. We will see, especially with this tendency for the individual to attack the judges, the clerks, the prosecutorial staff, and anyone who is not in agreement with his view of the proceedings. So I think that it's going to be incumbent that, you know, anybody with disabilities, that a message be sent that it is not allowable regardless of who the person is. That is, I mean, we know that it's harsher on certain people than others, but it is going to have to be, it's going to have
to be. Sister Charlotte, I just got a text message from Robert McCall. He's trying to get on, mm-hmm. So someone let him know that we'll bring him on very shortly.
Yes, I think that's good. Okay. I don't see his number. I see one very similar. So let us know as soon as you see his number pop up, and we will bring him on.
Yeah, it should be 202.
Just tell him to throw his hand up. press number one and put his hand up as soon as he's on, and that way we'll.
Yeah.
I've been looking. I've been watching.
Okay, thank you. Just a minute, text message.
Okay, that's a different
okay.
number.
Oh, there
but...
he is. I see it. It's a different number, but I see it. Let me label him. Yes, let me. I thought that was his number until I saw a different number from you, but let him know. Yeah. He is. Just text him and let him know he's there. He's ready for you whenever you are ready for him.
All right. Well, we're very blessed. Very blessed to have Mr. Robert McCall. Let's probably have a PSA, then we'll come back with our special guest, Mr. Robert McCall, the Government Affairs Department Director for CARE. After the next message you hear, his voice. Well, alaykum as-salam. We're going to have a PSA.
Yes.
Brother Fleming, sisters, so good to come back to this program after a year. We're really excited for our upcoming 9th annual National Muslim Advocacy Day on Capitol Hill, co-sponsored by the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations, the Mosque Cares, CARE, and a number of other Muslim organizations. So I'm really happy to be on this line.
We're very happy and blessed to have you with us. We usually try to do a PSA before you bring me on. I will read your bio and give you a proper introduction right after this PSA. If you would just hold on for just 1 second, Rob, we'd appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, give us one second. And everybody don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Dakota Hadi, host of Al Islam and Focus Learning Lab here on AM360, inviting you to join me Saturday evening at our new time, 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, as we continue to share inspiring and thought-provoking Islamic education. Inshallah, I will see you in the lab at our new time, 5 to 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Saturday evening. Assalamu alaikum, and thank you, Tanya.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Ni'mat Shaheed, restorative justice practitioner for the Oakland Unified School District and host on AM360's The Pearls of Women Quranic Mondays. We're asking you to help us make a difference in the life of a student. We need you to spread the word that CWSC is offering 5 college scholarships in the form of direct financial aid to students who qualify and are graduating from high school this year or current college students. Learn more and apply online today at cwsc.us. But hurry, the deadline for applications is June the 20th. Thank you for helping secure our next generation's intelligentsia. Assalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillah, because there is no God but the one God.
See the full picture.
Feel the void.
Read the Muslim Journal.
Bringing humanity together.
It's news with truth.
It's journalism with understanding.
Each week, Muslim Journal features the latest headline stories. Get a fresh perspective on American politics with informative editorials on the news and stories that affect you and your community the most. Muslim Journal also features exciting reports from around the globe. Subscribe to the Muslim Journal and stay informed about the world we live in today.
See the full picture.
Subscribe to the Muslim Journal today.
We are back on the air. Sir, back to you. Welcome back to Map 5, Muslim American Power 5. You are on the air with Brother Fleming Elamine and Sister Amate Lalaji Sabri and Shell Studded. Back to you, sir. Take over.
Thank you very much, Sister Cheryl. I want to welcome wholeheartedly our special guest this evening, Brother Robert McCall, Government Affairs Department Director on the Council on American Islamic Relations, the nation's largest Muslim civil rights and advocacy organization. Since 2011, he has overseen CARE's Muslim civic engagement and empowerment programs that bring American Muslim community concerns to Congress, the White House, and federal and state agencies. Mr. McCall has also coordinates CARE's national and state election activities, including Get Out the Vote, campaigns, and election surveys. Since 2015, he has served as the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations Steering Committee Chairman for the National Muslim Advocacy Day on Capitol Hill. He is also responsible for encouraging Muslim participation in networks and coalitions that promote justice and mutual understanding. Mr. McCall holds a master's degree in political science and a certificate in public affairs from the University of Florida in Gainesville. So we're honored this evening to have him with us on Map 5. And I introduce to some of you and just remind some others, Mr. Robert McCall. So if you would, Brother Robert, share with us how the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations got started, some of the founders that were involved in that process. Then we talk about the relevancy of the organization today, and then we'll focus in on what's coming up this month on our advocacy there on Capitol Hill.
Thank you so much. Assalamu alaikum. I'm so glad to be on this program again after a year to, again, talk about the National Muslim Advocacy Day and USTMO and all of our great joint work. So the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations is the nation's largest Muslim umbrella organization, and it has large Muslim civil society organizations like MASS, IGNA, the Mosque Cares, MUNA. It has advocacy organizations like CARES, the Council on American Islamic Relations, and it has nearly 100 state and regional shura councils and mosques that are actively participating. So when we talk about there's a National Muslim Advocacy Day on Capitol Hill, this isn't a couple D.C. think tanks with some Muslim staff. This is the Muslim grassroots base that's turning out to advocate for the issues that matter the most to us. Now, normally, we have a wide selection of issues. I mean, in the past, we've promoted, securing an Islamophobia envoy at the State Department, appreciating and celebrating Muslim Heritage Month in January. But this year is a very special agenda. We're hosting the Advocacy Day a little bit earlier to get active in Congress before it lame ducks with all these elections and the summer recess. And we're really going to be focused on, you know, what American Muslims have to say to their elected representatives in Congress about Gaza and U.S. foreign policy towards Israel and the Palestinians, and how we need to create a morally based and just national security and foreign affairs policy, one that, you know, opposes occupation, apartheid, one that promotes the ceasefire, one that stops the transfer of weapons, and one that promotes rebuilding. And so I really appreciate being on here today.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate you being here. One of the concerns that many of us had, Brother Robert, was how federal government was able to still supply weapons to the Israeli government in spite of all the things that have been taking place and the atrocity and near genocide in Gaza. And, of course, the excuse given was that, indeed, there was already a pipeline, et cetera, and they were honoring, you know, contracts that had already been approved, basically. But as you mentioned, there's also a moral contingency to that, too. And I think we have a duty to bring that to the attention of the legislators. If you would, even though I've been there a few times leading the North Carolina delegation, would you share some of the details of how that process actually works in terms of the 1, 2, 3, where do people go, who do they speak to, and what is the agenda that they leave with those various senators and congressmen in the process?
Absolutely. All great questions. So if you're interested in joining a state delegation, our registration page might say registration's closed. Don't be fooled by that. It's still open. We're just hitting max capacity in so many state delegations, we haven't re-upped the language. If you sign up now, in the next several days, you should definitely be able to secure a spot. We have, and you can go to USCMO. Again, that's USCMO.org. That stands for the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations. And you can go into their activities page, and the National Muslim Advocacy Day is front and center. So just make sure to register, put in your information. You're going to get a confirmation email. And then in 1 or 2 days, you're going to be connected with all the other delegates from your state's delegation. And if you were from North Carolina, you'd be put on an email with Brother Fleming and a few other civic leaders from that state. And they're going to make sure that they're scheduling congressional meetings for you as a constituent with your member of Congress and hopefully your state's 2 senators. And so that's the logistics of signing on. We next week are going to have a webinar for all attendees just to, again, train them on what our final policy issues are. Usually they're 100% written by now, but because things are so dynamic in what is happening in Gaza and Palestine and the region, that we are going to finish the agenda this Thursday so we have the freshest information and the most up-to-date app. So we're going to train you on not only what are the policy issues, which is, again, demanding a ceasefire, demanding an end to U.S. military aid, and promoting rebuilding, and we're doing that with our partners at Islamic Relief USA. We'll also have some additional side quest asks, you know, again, promoting having an Islamophobia envoy at the State Department, recognizing Muslim Heritage Month, promoting more visas for Hajj. So these are things that we'll definitely discuss. But you will be trained virtually next Wednesday, not this Wednesday, next, if you sign up. And then you'll be trained on person. So on the 29th, that Monday, you would travel to D.C., hopefully the night before, find some lodging, and then make your way out to the National Capital Visitor Center, which is underneath and right in front of Congress, where we have a very large auditorium, several hundred seats, nice stage, good projector. We're going to, again, train you on all these issues, give you an opportunity to connect with your state's delegation. And, you know, we're going to wish you the best of luck. And it goes from Monday to Tuesday, and hopefully by then you met with a number of members of Congress. But it's not only about meeting them in these 2 days. It's about forging relationships with your elected officials and their staff, so the next time you're concerned about something, you know who to reach out to. The next time you want one of these members of Congress, who hopefully have supported a ceasefire, visit your mosque, you have someone to reach out to. And when something new is breaking, or if your community needs more federal resources, you're in touch. And so we've been doing this for 10 years. This is our 9th advocacy day. We took a off year for COVID. And we have connected thousands of Muslims with their elected officials. And we're not only making connections, we're training the community on how to advocate for ourselves. So I think this is great to do for yourself. It's great to do for your children. I have a bunch of 10 and 12-year-olds at this event. No problems there. But, you know, we encourage everyone, again, to go to uscmo.org to register today, tomorrow, Wednesday, and to, you know, jump in and, you know, get civically engaged.
Brother Robert, thank you very much for that clear explanation. I had a young lady in Charlotte, North Carolina, to email me the other day expressing some concerns about her safety. And I assured her that we used to have that protocol in place. But if you don't mind, just comment on the safety protocol we may have to make sure there's no incidents and the kind of advice we give all the delegates once they arrive in D.C. about the safety issues.
Yeah, well, I mean, you are pretty safe in D.C. It's a high-security environment. When you're actually going to our event, you have to pass through Capitol Security. They're going to check your bag. They're going to check your person. And you're going to be cleared to enter a congressional facility. Our training happens there. When you exit, you're walking the grounds of the U.S. Capitol. And if you've been there before, you know that there is a police guard at every corner. When you're inside the buildings, not only have you passed security, but they have police officers stationed on every floor. It's one of the most secure places in the United States. Now, does that 100% guarantee safety? No, but we have not had an incident in the last 9 years. And sometimes, rarely, but sometimes we have had people trying to disrupt. And we train everyone just to respond non-confrontationally, to say it's a beautiful day on Capitol Hill and just to keep on walking. That's only happened 2 out of the last 9 advocacy days. It's actually been relatively fairly quiet. So I'm looking forward to, you know, a safe and secure Hill Day like everyone else.
Alhamdulillah. Well, Brother Robert, I'm going to give my co-host a chance to ask some questions because I have a little upper hand on the matter since I've been there three or four times.
You're a pro.
Let's see, let's see if our co-hosts have any questions, and we'll give them stuff and I'll ask their questions, and then we'll go to the board and see if there's any questions from the general public.
Well,
I do have a question.
Yes. And it goes to either CARE or any other organization that's in USCMO. If you have the agility to respond to issues that may come up before you have a planned activity, for example, right now the House is coming back and there's talk that Johnson is going to put together a supplemental aid package or either amend what has come from the senators to make a loan as opposed to just giving money to Ukraine. But within that whole package that came from the Senate, there was a provision that takes away aid from the UN Relief and Work Agency that provides humanitarian support to Palestine. So does CARE or any other organization in USCMO have the ability to go to the representatives before the 29th and the 30th to try and get them to make changes in the legislation?
Yeah, absolutely. And just to remind everyone, the legislative package adopted by the Senate in December, which had $14 billion in military aid for Israel, that had restrictions on UNRWA. The House has already adopted in a new aid package that was signed by the president a one-year moratorium, which is banning any aid to UNRWA. And so our talking points in our legislative and advocacy agenda, when we're specifically talking about calling for a ceasefire, calling about an end to military aid to Israel, calling for the rebuilding of Israel, Palestine, we are having our agenda drafted by American Muslims for Palestine and their C4 AJP action. And so it is a very Palestinian community-led agenda, and we'll definitely talk about those concerns. In the meantime, if you're looking to reach out to your member of Congress about Speaker Johnson's newly proposed package, which no one's seen, by the way, they had a failed $17 billion package, fail most recently. We don't know what it's going to look like. We know he said it will be introduced this week on Sunday when he was on Sunday Morning Futures on Fox News. And CARE, AMP action, I'm sorry, AJP action, we have action alerts already set up. If you go on CARE's website, cair.com, you're going to see a fresh new action alert titled, just wrote it, Urge Congress to Reject New Money for Israeli Crimes, Prevent U.S. Involvement in the Iran War. And so we already have a message going out to members of Congress. A few hundred people have taken action already. We encourage your listeners to join us.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Absolutely. Great question.
And also, as a follow-up, Professor Asifa Qureshi on LinkedIn last week, she posted a comment that she, I guess she had been to the Capitol recently, and she noticed that outside of the office of many of the representatives, there's the U.S. flag, but there's also the Israeli flag. And so that kind of surprised her. So I want to suggest that for the Advocacy Day that you include in your talking point when you meet with the representatives, whether it's the congressperson or the senator, to ask them if they have dual
U.S. and Israeli citizenship, because I think it's important for us to know those representatives who may be conflicted if they are citizens of Israel as well as the United States. You know, their oath is to defend the Constitution of the U.S. So how does that dual citizenship impact the decisions that they make?
You know, in actuality, it's not that someone is or isn't a dual citizen. And there are actually even Jewish members of Congress who may or may not have citizenship that have been very supportive of the cause of Palestinian human rights. So it's more of a question of, are people taking money from AIPAC? And that's when you can go to websites like Open Government and you can see, have they taken hundreds of thousands of dollars from AIPAC, which in my opinion should be a registered foreign agent, in the way it promotes a one-sided foreign policy to Israel. And so that's the real question. Who's taking money? That's where you're going to get more honest answers, because having an Israeli flag in front of your office doesn't denote dual citizenship. It just donates. It denotes that you've taken donations.
That's why I say to ask them directly if they are a citizen of Israel as well as the United States. I think it's important for us to know where allegiances lie. And I agree as far as those who have taken money from AIPAC, but I think that citizenship piece is a big part of it also.
Well, I hear you. And you have people like Brian Mast, representative from Florida, who has given speeches in his former IDF uniform, and things like that are concerning to me.
Yes, yes, definitely.
Other questions?
Sister Cheryl, do you have a question? No. You just got back from this, lady.
Yes.
You may have a question or two.
I did. I did, and actually I was sitting in on the hearing. Different. It's related, but I would say it's tangentially related. On the FISA hearing, right, last week, and I think it's related because, you know, they're attempting to add several amendments to FISA. And so I wanted to know if there was going to be any conversation or addressing what the FISA Reauthorization Act for this, because the House passed the reauthorization bill last week, and the modifications, even though, you know, the president didn't want the president warned about it, but, you know, the Section 702 is already been there. It already allows the government to collect the electronic communications for non-Americans when they're located out of the country without a warrant. But this is even, you know, all of the civil liberties groups have, whether they're Republican or Democrat, have warned against, you know, opening up FISA to even more.
Absolutely. And FISA, as it stands, is a horrible abuse of American civil liberties. And for anyone that doesn't know what we're talking about, FISA, Section 702, permits the U.S. government to not only scoop up communications overseas, which, you know, are not constitutionally protected, but you cannot separate American communications that end up overseas on foreign communications networks from foreign targets. It's a broad and general data scoop up. And so the American government has large swaths, millions and millions of communications on Americans tied up in NSA databases. And without a warrant, all too often, the FBI has snooped on these conversations. And so, again, there are some protections, but not enough. And, you know, House Speaker Mike Johnson, who's a conservative, said he was all for protecting American data until House Intelligence Committee Chair Mike Turner put the kibosh on that. And so
we saw last Friday it passed out of the House, that there were no added warrant mandates for U.S. data, no new real protections, just as is. It was passed out of the House for a renewal period of 2 more years. It could pass the Senate fairly quickly. It could still be around in 2 weeks before the advocacy day. I think that's a good note. We are working on the agenda right now. We have a fourth-page high-level item list of concerns, and I will definitely be making sure 702 is added to that. CARE also has a separate action alert on that, but you'd have to dig a little deeper on the website to find it.
Okay, I thought so, because I know that, I mean, like you may know that I'm here in California, and I know this is something that we've been speaking a lot about with CARE, with ACLU, and I just was in town, and it came up on the intelligence community. Audience, for not saying it. I'm using that one to use acronyms without explaining what they mean. But long story short, FISA is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. It was first enacted in, I believe, 1978. And it gives the government permission, the federal government, to set out all the procedures for physical and electronic surveillance and collection, supposedly of foreign intelligence information. But it has been used it's supposed to be used, a foreign collection, usually on foreign soil, but it can be used on domestic soil to collect information on foreign activity that may be impacting United States.
I appreciate the awareness on this issue. Not enough Americans know their data is being looked at illegally.
Exactly. And people always talk about, if you ever watch any kind of TV, you know about NSA and you know about these kind of things, but you need to be knowing that they can look at any kind of data. And just one more thing I want us to maybe be aware of, and you may have some feedback on this. So I was getting on a flight, and Brother Fleming, I'm going to tell you right now, I had to switch my flight because I said, I'm not going to Charlotte, not one more time. So I got stuck there for 12 hours, and I said, no, mm-mm. I'm a switch, and anytime they have me on Charlotte, I'm coming out of Charlotte. Now, one more time, they ruined my luggage, lost my luggage, had me set stranded there for 12 hours. I'm not going to Charlotte. Nope. I like the city. Not anymore. But most Americans don't know, and I hope that you are paying attention to most people who are traveling throughout the United States. I hope that you understand that one of the things that falls under FISA that people aren't paying attention to is the biometric boarding at airports under the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. And I was sitting because they usually have me in a wheelchair, I'm sitting, and so I'm kind of held hostage a lot at the boarding thing. And I was just watching the screen. And it's really tiny print. So if you're not used to watching the screen, you might miss it. But I took a photo of it, and I think I'm going to post it somewhere. And it says privacy information, biometric boarding. As you approach the e-gate or camera, your photograph will be taken and provided to U.S. Customs and Border Protection. They will compare that photograph to the images associated with your passport, visa, other travel documents, or prior border inspections. Now, they're supposed to delete this for U.S. citizens that are collected, within 12 hours. But for certain non-U.S. citizens, the photograph may be retained in secure Department of Homeland Security systems and used as a biometric confirmation of departure from the United States as required by law. And then it quotes it. But it also says that they can retain it and use that photo for other, and then it's a bunch of other purposes if you look under, ACFR 215-8, things like that. So it's something else that I do think that we need to be taking a closer look at. Why are you using this for and why? And why are you not putting this in documentation when people book flights? It's okay once you're at the airport, they have you held hostage. But this is not made clear when people are booking their flights.
Yeah, absolutely. And, we know that American domestic and international travel policies, national security policies are unequally applied. And so a lot of these programs were developed with the intent of, you know, carrying out the mandates of the so-called war on terrorism, which was used to database, scan, and scoop up information on the American Muslim community. You know, the photos that they take on departure domestically, those are routinely deleted, but those international travel photos, those can be kept. And if you're stopped by the TSA and they took your photo, well, then that kind of escalated it, and they may retain your data anyways, even though generally they delete these photos. So when you interact with the TSA, when you interact with CBP, if you have been watchlisted, if your name has been designated in some way by the federal government, these just aren't security checks. These become an act of intelligence gathering, and every question you answer can be logged in database. And so this has been a long, long concern about CARE. We're tackling it primarily through our watchlist litigation. You know, this week we're deposing the FBI and Department of Justice in an ongoing federal terrorism watchlisting case because several weeks ago the Supreme Court ruled we have a right to proceed. The government cannot moot our clients by taking them off the watch list. We don't know if that would ever be temporary or if they could just return them later. And so we're tackling this information gathering system. But, you know, it's something you need to be aware about. And also, everyone traveling, especially back into the United States, while they are subjected to a border search, it might take multiple hours then, but you're not obligated to really tell them much information at the U.S. border. You should say, yeah, traveled abroad, saw family, it was great. No, I'd rather not answer these questions. These are very personal. You might take several hours, but they're eventually going to have to let you in the U.S.
That's good information. Yeah. This is what I wanted. I just wanted to address that part about the, especially that part. And those of us who travel a lot and who are have our bags routinely, randomly searched. I have my routinely randomly searched. So much so I just leave a note in there. Say, your friend searched this one last time. I just leave a little note there, like a little fan. I just leave it in there. Just say.
It's an abuse of our citizens, and it's a waste of our tax dollars.
It is. I have TSA pre-checks. I have everything. But I just leave a little note. Have a great day. Your friend thirsty is the last time I came through.
It's a real struggle of the community. Absolutely. By the way, I would encourage people, and there's other groups like CARE, but if you are receiving repeated discrimination, repeated targeting, if you find four S's on your boarding pass, which means you're part of the selectee list, if you're having trouble flying, or if you've flown multiple times and you're always being stopped in ways that no one else is, you might be on the watch list. I encourage you to go to our website at cair.com and to fill out a civil rights complaint, which is at the bottom of the front page of our website. And we can at least evaluate whether you might be on the watch list. We can have you do the standard procedures to see if we can get you removed. And if it doesn't happen and you meet the requirements that we're looking for in plaintiffs, we might be able to sue on your behalf. But it just starts with a report to CARE either way.
Bob, if you didn't know, Sister Cheryl is also an elected official in the Bay Area. But the conversation reminds me of my daughter, Jamila Alamein, who used to work for ASHTO out of Washington, D.C. So she was involved in doing a lot of workshops across the country. And every time she gets to the airport, for some reason, this is about maybe four years ago, she was told that she had a similar name to someone on a watch list, so they had to recheck her luggage, et cetera. And so I sort of made an issue to pursue how long they keep that information on file and when do people get their names removed from a so-called watch list. It's absolutely insane. If you don't sue them, they have no rush to remove your name from that list, even though it's not the same name, it's a, quote, similar name. So it still is an issue going forward. So I'm so glad that we have a process in place to assist those who run into a problem, because I'm sure it's still going on some level or not. Sister Cheryl, I didn't mean to cut you off. Do you have other questions you'd like to ask, Brother Robert?
Oh, no. You didn't cut me off. You're absolutely correct. I've heard the same thing. And, you know, it is absolutely what is going on here. You know, and it's always backed up by an apology. Right?
Yes.
Oh, this is happening to you? Oh, I apologize. And then it happens again. Oh, your luggage is lost? Oh, we apologize. And then it happens again. Oh, how did you get that big old hole in your suitcase? Let us apologize. And then it happens again. My first set of luggage since January. And then it happens
again. Good to be aware, be informed, so you can take appropriate actions to defend yourself and society.
And I would also just let you know that here, you know, we have contact in DHS's Civil Rights Office and the TSA's own Civil Rights Office. In the Department of Justice's Civil Rights Office, and the FBI's Civil Rights Office. And so, you know, even when things are contentious with any administration, there are hardworking federal professionals that at least intake these cases. And sometimes if it happened really recently, we can get the videotape of what happened, or we can have them follow up with these people. So it doesn't always also end up in a lawsuit. Sometimes we can immediately alert supervisors to know that there's bad apples out there.
I do have a few more questions, Brother Fleming.
All right, then. Well, can we pause for a PSA, then we'll come back to your questions. If Brother Rob, you have a little more time to spend with us?
Yeah, I have a little bit
more
time. I was able to knock out an email while we're doing this, so I'm multitasking here.
Excellent. Wow. Let's go to the PSA because we're required to do so many on the hour there. So then we'll come back to our sister's questions with Mr. Robert McCall, our special guest for Math 5 this afternoon.
Don't touch that dial.
Family, community, city, state, country, and more. Everything starts with you, the individual you. What is the character of you? Are you a book? Can you be read? Join us every Friday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a wonderful hour of information being shared by you, with you, for you, the you in all of us. I am Martha Naila Abdullah, and I am your host for Community Developmental Stages. Again, every Friday evening from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., be there.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Imam Nikhil Upda, Assistant Imam of Masjid Al-Halim, New Medina, Mississippi, asking you to join me in supporting Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world.
Greetings. This is Priscilla Lukta of the University of Islam and Clara Muhammad School National Alumni Association. We support CWSC and AM360 because of their support of our group intellect. From the Model Communities National Resource Directory and Speakers Bureau to American Muslim 360 Broadcasting and more. Join in helping to build our national intelligentsia. If not me and you, then who? Visit CWSC.us today to make your tax-deductible gift at 910-317-0297. Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. CWSC, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, invites you to join us every Tuesday and Thursday from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. for CARE on Air. That's the Council on American-Islamic Relations. Our American Muslim 360 host is Edward Ahmed Mitchell, attorney and deputy director. Edward Ahmed Mitchell is an attorney and former journalist who serves as the deputy director of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, the largest Muslim civil rights and advocacy organization in the United States. Join us every Tuesday and Thursday 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Join us for Muslim American Power 5 on Mondays, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Muslim American Power 5, referred to as MAP5, featuring Sister Amatullah Sabri, Sister Cheryl Sadi, and Brother Fleming Alamein. That's Monday, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time for MAP, Muslim American Power 5.
And we are back. Just like that. Just like that. Ladies, get back to work. You are back on. Just like that. You're back on Model 5, Muslim American Power 5.
Yes.
And guests, let me let these guests know how they can call in. Sir, guests, if you are listening live with our special guest in the studio today, Brother Robert McCall, the CARE Government Affairs Department Director, and the chair of the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations Steering Committee. If you have a question or a comment, you may dial in at 515-605-9891. It's the best way to engage with the show. Test 1 will get you in the queue, and you can ask your brief question or comment. Now, Friday is Juma. Don't call in here giving us lectures. We already got a special guest on the line, so don't get any input calls today, no sir. We already got a special guest. If you want to be a special guest, you can go ahead and send us a comment at 910-317-0297, and we'll try and get you on a different show. But quick question, go ahead, give us a holler. Back at you, sir.
That brought a smile to my face. Thank you.
You don't want to talk about her, brother.
Yeah, you only need competition for the microphone.
One question. I got a couple of questions. I'll start off with you mentioned the point about Iran after this weekend and how that has impacted the language and the positions that President Biden has taken. Is CARE involved with the actions that the UN takes? That's one question. The second question is, if not CARE, what organizations in USCMO might be working more directly with the UN? And then final question is, I know that here in the Bay Area there is a push for Get Out to Vote. Do you want to share with our audience the Get Out to Vote activities that are going on throughout the country that CARE is sponsoring?
Yeah, absolutely. So number one, I would just comment that it's the far right Israeli government, and they're making an attempt to distract from the Gaza genocide by trying to drag the U.S. into a regional war instead of having to pay attention to our demands for a de-escalation, for a ceasefire, for humanitarian aid. Israel chose to strike an Iranian embassy in Syria. Embassies since medieval times are, you know, considered to be protected as if they were on the land of that country which they represent. It was a flagrant violation of international law to strike an embassy. And so, you know, we saw that Iran retaliated as, you know, Israel would have calculated it would have done something to do. And this, again, this is a way of trying to take pressure off Israel as their genocide in Gaza and their occupation in the West Bank and other territories and their apartheid policies are just becoming clear as daylight to anyone rationally looking at this situation. So CARE is an organization, you know, again, we have our action alerts going to Congress. We have our messaging going to Congress. Now, when we talk about, you know, reaching out to the UN, the UN is a very big organization. I know that the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations, its board leadership, they have attended meetings with UN representatives, usually during the UN's General Assembly. CARE leadership, other national Muslim organization leadership will go to New York to press our concerns. But as for day-to-day operations, CARE isn't directly involved with the UN. But we do have messaging towards the UN, and we do celebrate and welcome its statements, especially when they are pointing to the genocide that is taking place in Gaza. And we highlight these statements for the U.S. government officials because it's one thing for the UN to say something. It would be another thing for the U.S. government to listen and act on that. And that is what we're not finding right now. So if anything, CARE is just trying to promote what the UN is finding to the U.S. government instead of having the U.S. government ignore that. As for USCMO organizations, I am sure American Muslims for Palestine would be one of the leading organizations there. You also have the Indian American Muslim Council, and they are actively involved in lobbying on these issues too.
And
now,
so
when we get to voting
and
getting out the vote, you know, CARE and breaking down the numbers, we estimate that there's upwards to 2 million registered Muslim voters across the country. We have strong bases of Muslims in swing states. We're talking with other national Muslim, Arab, and other groups to see if we can increase voter registration. Brother Fleming, I would like to get you and the Mosque Cares Network involved in some of these conversations. Because to be frank, when we look up Muslim voters, I'm in that same category. You can't find me. My name's Robert McCaw. My son Hamza McCaw, I can find on a first name data match. But it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of peer-to-peer networking and outreach to find unregistered Muslim voters. We've been doing a great job for the last 20 years building off the success of each election. But now's the time where not only do we have to convince people to register to vote, we actually have a struggle turning out Muslim voters. And this is where it's going to be critical during this election year when you're looking at Biden or Trump. They might have similar policies towards Israel, and that would make a lot of Muslims potentially sit on the couch. And we need to mobilize them either way. So we have to convince them that local races matter, that congressional races matter, and turning out and voting one way or the other, even in the presidential election, whether it's Democrat, Republican, or third party, like Cornel West, Jill Stein, someone else, I think it's really important that we figure out how can we mobilize our community. So this is going to be a group effort.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, it's an ongoing effort also. It's really a nonstop effort when it comes to registering people to vote and trying to stimulate the base to make sure they come out to vote. And I've been working this vineyard since Jimmy Carter was president, and it seems to be the same song actually every year. But what's different this year is that we're working with a larger group called Face United to Save Democracy. It is a large group headed by Dr. Skinner. She's been very active in some of what they call key states, having some of us in the faith community to call certain constituents to make sure they're going to the polls, to have them in place at the polls to make sure they're not being intimidated. There's about four things she's focused in on to make it happen. And then, of course, ACGG has been involved for some time with our Take Five campaign to get people to take personal responsibility to register people to vote and make sure they go to vote. But it is an effort. I remember when I first got involved with ACGG, we had some of us who felt that indeed any involvement in the political arena was wrong. And I'm going back to 1997 now. So we had to really convince some of the brothers that it's not wrong. Let's go back and read the Medina Charter very carefully. We have a blueprint from our beloved Prophet Muhammad on what to do in these situations. We had to convince the Muslims to even get involved. Sadly, that's still somewhat of the case today. It's just not as vocal. But we've got to stay engaged and make a difference. We have to stay engaged and make a difference. And by all means, Brother Robert, I'll be glad to work with you in this effort. We'll get together, inshallah, in a couple of weeks in D.C. and do what we can collectively to ensure this engine keeps going forward.
Oh, I appreciate it, and we're going to need all hands on deck. So I am reaching out because I know you're very involved not only with the Mosque Cares, but its civic engagement affiliates.
Do we have any calls on the board? Any hands raised? That people from the audience would like to ask a question?
I don't see any. Looks like we have
Yeah, we do. We have a couple people on, but no hands. I think that the question or the dilemma that I see our communities in on voting is, you know, that it seems to be a lot of voter some apathy, but also just, you know, the conflict, right? When I said to my own children, when I said to their friends, in addition to being in D.C., I was also, you know, Florida, a little bit on the east. It's almost going back to the premise of doesn't make a difference, which is why I think going back to the Amitabh comment earlier about this trial that's taking place in New York and the ones that have been pushed off, delayed in Georgia and again in New York and D.C. is why it's important that people stay engaged and pushing for, you know, proper resolution or disposition of some of these trials and not being so resigned to the thing that nothing is happening, can happen, will happen. Is this almost apathetic resignation that nothing that I can do will make a difference? And it is so I think it's also incumbent while we're teaching people about civics and about their rights, is that we're teaching them the importance of, you know, if we can teach people to read Quran, we can teach them how to pray, we can teach them, you know, how to quote Surah and everything else. But if we're not teaching them that the strength of being a Muslim is also in your resilience and your discipline, what difference does it make to have discipline in praying and going to Ramadan and sacrifice of Ramadan if you're not learning resilience from it? If you're just going to give up and lie down when someone is treating you poorly. I think there's a juxtaposition to that. Do you guys not see this? What I see? You have the strength of character to go through Ramadan. You have the strength and the willpower to be a Muslim, period. And that is prayer and Ramadan and charity. And all it takes to abstain from the things of this world that can turn you into a horrible person. You have that kind of strength of character. But you should have the strength of character to be engaged in your community in a way that says, even though this over here made me upset, I cannot just sit by and watch people get destroyed.
I think
whole community is destroyed. I know, Cesar, that people may be on different ways on the tracker, but at the same time, sitting around and not doing anything should not be an option, period. Mm. It should not be an option. I'm watching, not just in Gaza, but right now this morning they reported in Sudan. It is the longest running civil war in the world right now, and they are in a famine. In the Sudan, in the Congo, in Haiti, in South America, in Central America, in Guam and Guatemala, in all over this world. And so it does matter. It does matter. These elections have consequences. And it's not just a consequence of emotion. And sometimes we let our emotions take over our strategy. We have power and influence. And to not think that you don't have power and influence because you are upset about something, instead of going and using your power and influence to affect decision-making. Affect decision-making. get people into office who can affect your decision making, who can affect how the world is, how the society is being run, to affect how laws are being made. But sitting around and doing nothing or complaining, or even just like today, they're shutting down a couple of freeways. While that may get some media attention, what is it going to get us in the end? What is the end game? Is what I want to know.
I think it's as simple as enjoining what is good, al maruf, and forbidding what is evil, al munkar. And this is a celebrated virtue in Islam, and it's an Islamic duty. We have a duty, and Abu Bakr reminded this to us. If we see something our leader is doing good, thank them. And if we see them doing something bad, advise them. In the U.S. Constitution in parallel, it tells us we as citizens, as residents, we have the right to freely assemble, to address grievances, to petition the government, to meet with our elected officials, and to vote. And so I believe these two values are simpatico, and that we should, as a community, always be advising our leaders and our would-be leaders on what we believe is good and what we believe is wrong. And it's as simple as that. And nearly every mosque has a civic engagement team now. CARE's finding the holdouts right now, and we're training them. And, you know, in North Carolina right now, we had a couple good meetings for the first time with a couple mosques that just had never done it, right? But there are many communities that are well-organized, and they're on board. And the ones that just haven't done it yet, they're doing it. And, you know, whether it's the Muslim Hill Day or engaging with elected officials during the election, we have a duty. It goes beyond just a civic duty. We have a moral, religious duty and imperative to tell our leaders, especially the ones that are using our tax dollars, what is good and what is wrong. That's it. That is being resilient. And resilient, you keep on saying the word resilient, but that's what a resilient community looks like, one that has a voice.
Thank you.
I think that we also have to look at, as Muslims, we do not, and I know people use this expression, and it turns me off sometimes when I hear it, but it is the truth. We do not control the narrative that is distributed to the vast majority of people in this country, the people who are not socially or politically or civically engaged, they are consumers of corporate media. And corporate media, for the most part, is controlled by those type of organizations, like you said, AIPAC and others, just like the Congress is controlled by these different lobbying entities, not only the Congress, but we see also, it's been revealed more recently, the highest court in the land, the Supreme Court, is impacted by these lobbies and rich billionaires and to that extent. But I think that it's important for us to realize that the general population of the United States, if it were not for October 7th, didn't really care what was going on in Gaza because they had no idea. Palestine, where's that? You know, what are they doing? But this is something that has been going on. And, you know, if there's a little flare-up or the first or the second intifada, you know, maybe it will be briefly in the news cycle, as they say. But as Muslims, we have a very muted voice in the public square as far as what our concerns and our interests are. And it starts at the local level. But nationally, I see that as a void. You know, I'm thankful that our community has the Muslim Journal, but we're not getting our message out there, and I'm grateful that we have AM360, but we have to think of a way that we can get a megaphone that, you know, if you're in a room
a very small room and you're encouraging what is good and forbidding what is bad, but there's only two or three people that can hear that, that's not going to be effective. So we have to get a strategy of how are we going to get our message out to all the citizens of the United States consistently. That's what I see.
As and we do have Mr. News. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brother Robert.
No.
Please continue.
I was going to say that we do have some increments in that media arena. Muslim News is very effective as a TV program, even though it's somewhat limited, but it is out there in the media to present our perspective. And they've invited some very knowledgeable people on their program to keep us current. But I would advise the listening audience, if you're not tuned into Muslim News, it does come on a daily basis, you know, Google it up and attach yourself to that to get informed on some things that are important to us that's on the national agenda. Beyond that, I would say this too as a reminder. You know, I frequently go back and study the history of the community when, you know, Prophet Muhammad, you know, always got him to the highest echelons of paradise. When he first started, he worked in an environment that was almost barbarians. I hate to put it that way, but he was in a very difficult environment that he had to deal with and try to teach them about this whole idea of life after death. Some of them planned and plotted to kill him because of that. Now, he was just in the three of us that was called then. It was not Mecca then, but or it was not called, you know, Saudi Arabia then. But he was in an environment that was almost dangerous to even say the word Allah or say anything other than those idols they were worshiping every day of the month that they made by their hands. And they had almost 365 of them at the, what we call the Kaaba today. Now, this man could make the changes he made by the grace of Allah, of course, and the support of Allah. In that kind of environment, we have no excuse not to be vigilant in this environment. We're in a much better position in terms of technology, et cetera, to get a message out on a consistent basis. And the message starts with our personal lives. Let me say it again. The message starts with our personal lives. And if people see you being what you say you are, the platforms that you want to be on, in some cases, will come to you. And they want to hear what you have to say because they see that you're really for humanity and you're universal in your thinking. And they want to hear your solutions to solve some of these problems that are ongoing in the community. So there's a way out. It's work involved, yes. There's disappointment involved, yes. But we have a commitment internally and morally to be in the public arena, given a voice of reason, and sometimes the voices of unreason seem to be taking the advantage. So let's keep our spirits alive and be resolved and know that we come from a community that has been very, very successful and still going forward, regardless of what the public media says. Media just means messages and pictures. So what's the first message you want to send out there? The mess of our own individual behavior being an asset to the community, and people begin to respect you for that, and I've lived that experience. And now, by the grace of Allah, you know, some things have come forward that I'm a part of, but it all came because of the grace of Allah, yes, because of what I was in the community as well. So be the community servant that you internally see yourself as. You can make a difference, even eventually into the national media, inshallah. I don't want to do a kubba because I was told not to do that. So I'm going to pass on to Brother Robert.
Well, and so actually I handed it off to you because I was buying some time. I was trying to look this up. So, CARE, we have a really well-honed communications department. A number of our national staff are trained in doing one-on-one interviews with the media and also then with writing, developing, drafting, distributing press releases. And that happens in our, you know, 30 offices and chapters across the country, right? And so when you just look at since October to March, CARE had appeared on local media or what we said was mentioned on the radio, and that had a reach of up to 148 million people. That might be the same person twice if they were on the local news 1 month and on the same news again. But that viewership was up to just in the visual and radio media, 148 million. When you look at for the entire last year, if you look at the reach, every time CARE is mentioned in the Washington Post, the New York Times, local, state, national, international news, and, you know, I was on Al Jazeera several times in the last month. it actually equals to being quoted, seen, read, reread by several billion people. And so CARE is the nation's most often quoted Muslim organization, but that's not just out of happenstance or luck. You know, we're funded by the community, we buy the right resources and tools, we hire the right people, and we communicate a consistent message where we're issuing up to 9 press releases a day sometimes, where we do media interviews, you know, several times a day and about a dozen a week. And that message is getting out there. And when we talk with elected officials in Congress, when we talk to their staff, when you talk about these click and send action alerts that CARE is sending, AMP is sending, Jewish Voice for Peace is sending, you know, anti-war groups like Answer Coalition, Code Pink, et cetera, they have heard more from our side of the debate than the other side. And so, yes, there are still a number of glass ceilings in the media space. We don't have enough Muslim presenters. We don't have enough Muslim guests. When it's talking about Palestine, we don't always have a Palestinian speaking. But we are breaking into that media environment, into that ecosystem, and it's only going to keep on getting better. So I wouldn't want to take a defeatist position and say our voice isn't being heard. I don't want to throw spaghetti at the wall. I want to bake lasagna and drop it on the carpet. I want people to walk by and be like, oh, what's that stain? Oh, I could never get rid of that, right? And so the same thing goes for how we as a community need to communicate. We need to be consistent. We need to be trained. You know, I know I keep on pitching stuff CARE does, but we've grown into a large organization. If your mosque, if your community wants a media training, our communications department can train your leaders or your spokespeople on how to do media interviews or how to communicate its message. And CARE doesn't do this alone. There are other groups like Rethink Media, there's like several different Muslim media groups out there. There's MPAC, et cetera. Mm-hmm. We're all working on the same goal of training our community to speak and be heard. So we just have to keep on doing it.
We do have one hand up, Brother Fleming.
Okay, please state your name and ask your question. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. This is Brother Muhammad from the Ummah of Prophet Muhammad.
Yes, Brother Muhammad.
Are you from Georgia?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
Make sure you got it. Yes, we can hear you, but hold on just a second. We can hear you. The one admonition. Remember what I said. You can give us a brief comment or a question, but there's no coop box this morning, brother. We only got about half an hour, so we got to get all the questions in. So what's your brief comment or question, sir? Good morning.
Well, the biggest comment I have right here, Sam, isn't it strange that Allah has made this opportunity for the Muslim world to speak not only to ourselves but to others, and yet still we are not talking about the main concern of the message that we're supposed to be delivering, and that there's one God, that Muhammad is his messenger, the seal of the prophet, and that we are supposed to be coming together in shura or consultation and see how we can bring this world back to where it started from, in the control of the free will of the human beings who occupy this earth, occupy everything that's going on. How are we to get the opposition of that out of our intellect, out of our emotions, out of our food, shelter, clothing, transportation, by sitting down and having sure and talking about how to do it the way Almighty God Allah has prescribed it? That is the biggest help we can give the Jews, Christians, Muslims, drug addicts, abortion, whatever we're going to deal with. We need to talk more about what is happening today and what we are still supposed to be striving for tomorrow. And that's one community, one soul, one et cetera. Just want to say that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I think that's a very poignant comment in that we do need to use these opportunities to educate about Islam and what it means to be Muslim in America. And I'm really happy to point out that this Ramadan, more Muslim children and non-Muslim children had off during Eid than any other Ramadan before, right? That more students are having accommodation policies. More prisoners are having accommodation policies. More employees are having them during Ramadan so that they can, you know, be seen and given spaces so that they can work productively or take breaks, and not necessarily in front of food. So my son, he goes to the library during fasting, right, with the other Muslim students. He loves the computer time. But we see our public institutions starting to respond to Muslim holy days. And we see our other institutions, whether it's the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission, to make sure our workspaces are better for us, whether it's the prison systems or how police arrest and book Muslims, or, you know, whether it's nearly every federal agency recognizing their Muslim employees during Eid, or now that we have at least 3 or 4 states that actually celebrate Muslim Heritage Month in either July or January. So we're getting our message out there, and we're being seen, and we need to do a better job, always need to do a better job. But we're not starting from scratch anymore. We have a template, and if we find that there's enough Muslims in school, we can show them what the hundreds of other school districts across the country are doing. So we're having success, and we're going to keep on doing this.
Yes, and Brother Robert, I would add to that that we have the state of Tennessee also, who have Muslims in March. They have the whole month of March, where they celebrate every day some contributions from the Muslim community. So there's a lot of effort that's been put forward. I know here in North Carolina we have school districts that allow the children to come to Juma without being penalized if they want to come to Juma on Fridays.
Oh, my son does that.
Yes, and Sunday recognize the Eid celebrations. Even the governor of North Carolina made sure that the inmates in the state of North Carolina had access to halal food on our holidays, and it's based on relationships that you establish. And I have to give credit to some of the members of ACGG who make that happen. So it's building. As you said, Brother Rob, we're not at zero, but we have to continue building coalitions with others and let them see that we really are here for the movement of humanity going forward and not going backwards as a collective group, you know, inshallah.
Yeah, the
Muslim
City Coalition is doing a lot of work. Right.
Okay, here's two or three voices at one time. Let's do one voice. So, sure, take the voice.
No, I said the Muslim Civic Coalition has been doing a lot of yeoman's work on this across the country. They've been working coalition with a lot of these groups, with CARE, with ACGG, with Muslim Americans and Public Service. They've been doing a lot of work on a lot of these initiatives across the country, making sure that Muslim athletes, I mean, not only recognizing our holidays, but also recognizing that Muslim athletes can dress in clothing that makes them feel comfortable and not have to compromise, you know, their beliefs and still participate in sports. So, yeah, I just want to make sure that we know that we're not helpless. Or as helpless as it may seem, that we do have power, and that we're using that power in our voices and in the influence in our numbers, right? They come to us when they want something, so we should go when we want or need the accommodations that we have. We have so many numbers, right? Going back to the Brother Robert's comment, it is not just a civic engagement, a moral imperative.
Sure. May I?
Absolutely.
May I?
Absolutely.
Yeah, now we have some real historical. Like I know in 1968, Ramadan and feeding the incarcerated personnel and were receiving their iftar packages back in 1968, which me and another other group of Muslims established. We also know that the coming of Imam Waqi Muhammad on the scene also opened, he was the first endorsing agency for Muslim chaplains, prison chaplains, chaplains in the hospital. We have some very historical things. We have Chaplain Abdul Rashid Muhammad, the first Islamic chaplain in the United States Armed Services, who's also in the encyclopedia, is that we have to do the early history of our coming aware of who we are now, as human beings and what our responsibility is to others. Here in Georgia, where I'm at, I established the freedom for children in Georgia to be released on Juma, to have separate meals at lunchtime so that they can have the opportunity to have some form of halal food. So we have to concentrate more on what has been done in the present day history, because our history here in the United States of America starts in the coming of the mercy of Allah to Farad Muhammad, to Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and then to Imam Warfi Muhammad, to put it in a straight, purified state of expression, which we know the whole world has recognized Almighty God Allah evolving a human being to the point who we're doing what we're supposed to be doing now, and that is calling people to prayer, calling people to Tawheed. Mm. Some of the basic things that the whole world has suffered from. They suffer from unity. They suffer from loving for each other, but they love for themselves. And I think when we get more consistent with bringing the message of Al-Islam, the way that the Creator has said has always been for all human beings, but we have to go about it in our own free will after knowledge. And we know Allah said His knowledge is always near, always has been, and always will be for those who are seeking that with their own free will.
So, yes, sir. Alhamdulillah. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
We appreciate your comments very much. Well, we just want to remind you that we do have a special guest that we're invited to speak specifically about a specific program taking place this month, and we want to honor his time. And that's our distinguished guest, Mr. Robert McCarver. We invite you to call back in, and we'll give you more of an opportunity to speak on the program. But thank you for your comments this evening. But we want to turn the program back over to Mr. McCall. He's going to be directing us on the 29th and 30th of this month in Washington, D.C. for a very important program. But thank you again for calling in. We appreciate your comments, brother. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam.
I know our time is running a little short. We only have about 18 more minutes, so I want to give Brother Robert any kind of comment he'd like to make as we begin to close the program out, and give our co-hosts also an opportunity to ask their closing comments and ask questions if they'd like to ask questions. We want to remind the audience again about the date for the Advocacy Day on Capitol Hill and the specific times, the registration process, you know, et cetera. So if you would remind us about that, Brother Robert, I'd really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just want to thank everyone again for listening to this program, and I hope you can turn out, get to Washington, D.C. on Monday, April 29th, Tuesday, April 30th for the 9th Annual National Muslim Advocacy Day on Capitol Hill. You can participate in this event by going to the website uscmo.org, go to events, go to registration, and sign up. There might be a notice about the registration deadline passing. The link is still working. Just sign up, and inshallah, one of our team captains, one of our meeting schedulers, is going to make sure that there's a constituent meeting with your name on it where you can meet with your representative, your two U.S. senators, or at least their staff, and also meet with other representatives from your state that other delegates are constituents of. We're going to be advocating on, you know, issues related to Palestine this year, calling for an immediate ceasefire and to all weapons transfers and a rebuilding of the region. We also have a number of important issues to the Muslim community we'll be advocating for as well. It's a great way to get civically involved. It's a great way to get civically trained. We have a lot of people that return every year, but we have new faces too. And if you haven't done it, I'm encouraging you to do it now.
Yes, and one of the other benefits is not advertised is networking. You get to know Muslims around the country, and you find some common grounds to work on beyond the Hill, the day on the Capitol Hill. So it's a very fruitful, very beneficial event, and Allah blesses us each time with success. Inshallah, we have the same blessing this year because we have some serious matters to be concerned about, but we have faith in Allah that too will be resolved with our effort. With our effort and Allah's grace and mercy. So, any questions from our other co-hosts on the program this afternoon?
Will you have a pre-meeting before the? You say I know there's a pre-meeting, and I'm
assuming
you're going to host it.
Yes. So if you registered this week, next Wednesday, if you register, you're going to get the notice for it in advance. We're going to have a training on what all the policy issues are. We're going to go over once again how the Muslim Advocacy Day is going to work. We'll give you a preview, almost ready for publication of our internal handbook for delegates, so you can get even more information and details about the event. And then when you show up on Monday morning at the Capitol Visitor Center, you will get all the information you need on the issues again. We'll give you tips on, you know, how to navigate around Capitol Hill. And then you're going to be led by amazing people like Brother Fleming, who've been doing this with us almost from the beginning. It's not the beginning. It's been a while. It's been 10 years. And so we're going to make sure you're all trained up and ready to go, and you're going to have a good time.
I was glad to join you all. I will. I'm debating because I'm going to steal away.
You should do it.
For a few days. I'm going to steal away, though, because it is my birthday weekend. So I will be stealing away. It's the 29th.
Happy birthday.
Early, queen.
Early happy birthday. You celebrate your birthday.
Thank you. It's the day of Queens. So I'm thinking I'm going to be on an island somewhere. I'm going home to Puerto Rico for a few days. My sons are there before they go to Punta Cana for his birthday on the 5th. I know.
Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico is Dominican.
Puerto Rico is closer to D.C. than Contra Costa, so. You'll be close enough.
I know. So I say maybe I can drop in and see you on the 30th. Come back through on the 30th. But the 29th, I will be there. Yeah, they're gonna go. They're gonna fly through and come see me first, and then go there. Yeah,
I spent about four days in Puerto Rico with Cassandra about 4 years ago. We had a wonderful time down there in Puerto Rico. Wonderful time. Wow.
You cannot have a bed in
La Isla. Yes, it was one. In fact, we found the location at the resort we stayed at. We kept asking, where are the black Puerto Ricans at? So you don't want to go over there. I said, why not? I'm going to find them anyway. Where do you want me to go or not? So I found the community. Had a good time eating food, just, you know, socializing the whole nine yards. And finally got a car that I could drive around a little bit. I used to driving down there. It's a whole different ball game. But we found our way around and had a wonderful time. Went to the forest. You know, it was very, very enchanting. I would call it that, but like almost like an Everglade kind of thing. But had a wonderful time in Puerto Rico. So, alhamdulillah. All right, then. So, Samantha, you have a question for Brother Robert?
Yeah. No, I don't. Do you? Well, maybe I do. What about involvement of younger people in maybe leading up to their participation in Advocacy Day? So in other words, do you have training programs for high school students?
So we don't have a separate training program, but we've had delegates that are like 10 years old that have started from the beginning, and they're like 19 now and still showing up. And so, you know, you learn by doing. We don't have a special children's program. We give the young folks the same amount of respect they deserve as any adults. They're there to participate. Usually it's kind of special when you get someone younger there, and the team captains are trying to coach them and build up that encouragement so that they feel courageous enough to talk some good talking points and make some nice asks. And people have a good time. Just make sure that you're wearing comfortable shoes. The one thing I will advise everyone, Leave those work shoes, dress shoes at home. Wear your best walking shoes because the pavement on Capitol Hill is unforgiving.
Yeah.
And I would just add to that, it's a long distance between the Senate buildings and the legislative buildings.
Yeah, there is.
That's a nice.
We'll get your steps.
Yes. You'll definitely get more than your steps in for sure.
You're not going to take them through the tunnels, brother?
Well, if you have someone from the Senate office or, you know, a legislative person, they can get you on the train from one side to the other, but most of us walk.
Yeah.
Most of us walk.
Yeah, you know. If someone has a disability and they can make it out to the Hill Days, Capitol Hill isn't the most handicapped accessible place, but they have done a better job over the years. So everything is ramp and elevator accessible. You know, I would definitely encourage someone to have an electric wheelchair if they were going to be on scene, though.
Yeah, I'm a little spoiled. They take care of me when I come.
That's good.
I take care of me. So the registration is still open. But let me make sure you send me the information so I can post it when I post the episode of the show so I can make sure.
Yes.
I mean, I have some of the information because I get it directly from here anyway.
Yes.
But I want to make sure I post it directly with the show. Get some people out.
USDNO.org, go to their events page. You'll find the registration nice and prominent.
And
I'll send you the flyer also to Cheryl so you can post it.
That would be great.
Go ahead, sister. A goal in the number of people, is that what you're asking?
You know, we already have 300 people registered. I expect we're going to have over 400 by the end of the week.
Alhamdulillah.
Yeah, you're not going to show up to a small tent circuit.
Let me ask one final question. Positions that are available with CARE, we might have some people who listen to this broadcast and they're wondering
we're actively hiring for several positions. I don't have them on the top of my mind, but if you want to check it out, you can go to our website at cair.com. On the About tab, click that, and we do have job postings that are currently open, and we are hiring.
Okay, so if you want to specifically engage and compensated, check it out.
We should also emphasize that isn't this the time for students who want to do the internship for the Roberts?
I'm currently considering summer interns. In fact, I'm a week late to do it. So if you get your internship application in, I'm going to look at that too.
Yes, we should be advertising that as well, because I know I saw a bunch of them when I was there, a bunch of students walking around getting tours, so we want to get some of those in, because currently there are not enough Muslims. That's the other way to get students interested in running for positions later, is to get them in as interns, right? Get them in early. Engaged.
It always looks good on your application when you're going to college or getting into the real world.
Yes, sir. So let's see if we can get that information posted as well, Brother Fleming.
Yes. Alhamdulillah, we'll do that. We'll do that, Sister Jerome. All right, listen, I want to thank Brother Robert McCall again from CARE for spending this afternoon with us on Muslim American Power 5. We really appreciate your contribution and, of course, your dedication to move our community forward collectively as from our Muslim concerns perspective. And the leadership role you've taken for some time now and your, detailed, natural ability to analyze things and come up with solutions. So we thank you for all the skill sets that Allah has given you. And thank you again for being a member and our guest for this afternoon. Any closing comments you want to make, feel free, because we have about 5 minutes to wrap things up.
Just go to our website. Make sure you subscribe to our daily action alerts. We're putting out 2 to 3 alerts a week. We're going to provide you up-to-date and current policy information on where the Muslim community stands on almost every issue. And I get emails every day from the public. If you have a question, my email is rmccaw@care.com. Feel free to reach out. If you have a suggestion, we're happy to hear it.
Sounds good.
And the website is very consumer-friendly, very easy to access, and always have current information under the website, but very useful. And it's wonderful to navigate. So again, we thank Brother Robert McCall, our Government Affairs Department Director for CARE, and we thank those that called in this afternoon. We have a few more minutes for closing comments from our other co-hosts, so take Sure, Sister Amatullah, what would you like to say to close out our program this afternoon?
Well, I thank Brother Robert for the information he shared with us. I think it's very valuable in our objectives here at MAT5 in terms of encouraging faith in action through our civic and political engagement. Brother Fleming, I'd like for you to give the name again for the organization you mentioned. I think it was a woman preacher, maybe, who was the head of the organization. It was something about faith.
Yes, Dr. Skinner.
Yes,
it's called Faith United to Save Democracy. Yes, Faith United to Save Democracy. It's Dr. Belinda Skinner. She sort of heads that effort. I should have had my computer up operating. But, again, I'll tell you the name. The acronym is Faith United to Save Democracy. In fact, we have a Zoom meeting this afternoon. And maybe I can forward you so I'm going to tell you some information once we have that meeting and encourage others. She's focusing in on those states that are swing states, and she tries to encourage people to actually be at some of these polls to make sure no one is being challenged unnecessarily when they go in to cast their votes. She also provides a list of people that you can actually call in various states to encourage them to vote, three or four things like that she does on an annual basis. So, again, it's entitled Faith United to Save Democracy, and it is an interfaith group. So if you hear that, tune in. You know, if you have the time, get engaged, because we all want to protect our rights and the rights of others to worship the faith that you choose to worship from your own God conscience.
Sounds good. Thank you for that, for reminding us of that.
Yes, ma'am. And Sister Cheryl, you have any closing comments you'd like to share with our listening audience?
Guys, do the work. We find that we, you know, when we do the work, all the good that we want, that we see will come. It may not come quickly, but it will come, and it will come, quote unquote, on time. You know, my grandmother used to say, might not come on our time, but it will come on time, right? I mean, we need to stop self-sabotaging. We self-sabotage when we don't do. We can just do. God created us. We're powerful. We're more powerful than we ever think we can be. We just need to do the work.
Yes.
And you know I'm going to say that last sentence when you finish. You know the last sentence.
All right.
I'll let you do the rest, and then give me my 30 seconds at the end to say the last sentence. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, we'll give you 30 seconds, guaranteed. But just as we, you know, still began to appreciate what we've been given for this new year, 2024, you're here on Grace and Mercy, and you're obligated also to help do something with your life, to help those that could benefit from your work effort, and that is your gift. That is your gift from your Creator. So this is 2024. Do more in 24. Learn more in 24. Listen more in 24. And by all means, love more in 24. And we thank all of you for listening. We thank every soul that tried to listen, those that did listen, and inshallah, those that will listen in the future. This, of course, is Muslim American Power 5. And we thank you for giving us part of your day today. Sister Cheryl, I'm going to give you all your 30 seconds plus.
Thank you so much. We remind you to stay purposeful, stay prayerful, stay philanthropic, stay powerful, politically engaged, and remember, as we change ourselves, our own nature, our attitudes, our contributions to the world around us will in turn also change. Change what you want, and you'll change how you act. This has been Muslim American Power 5. We bring this to you each Monday, 10 a.m. Pacific time to 1 and 1 p.m. Eastern time. Talking about not just civic engagement, but how we as Muslims can transform our faith into action through proactive civic engagement, examining our role as Muslims in establishing a more just society. Stay informed, stay educated, stay engaged. Inshallah, we will see you next Monday, same time, same channel. Stay good, stay faithful, do something to help us sometime this week. We thank you for your participation, listening to us. Inshallah, we'll see you next week. As-salamu alaykum. That's a wrap.
As-salamu alaykum.